live from the Capo Chevrolet GMC studios, you're listening to Omaha Sports Insider, powered by AM 590 ESPN Omaha and KMTV. Now, more with Joe and Nick on OSI.
All right, 5 o'clock hour underway here, AM 590 ESPN Omaha. As we told you prior to the break, going to have some special guests joining us in studio throughout the week this week. So we're going to count down towards the holiday season. And for a lot of people, Christmas Day marks the beginning of the NBA season. Now, it's not actually the beginning of the NBA season, but Brian Windhorst, ESPN reporter, joining us in studio now. And Brian, you yourself have admitted that once the first football flies in the air, people stop caring about basketball for a few months. And that's all about to change next week for a lot of fans.
I know. My favorite time of the year is the start of NFL training camps until Christmas Day. That's like my quote-unquote slow time. I actually just had to write and voice today an essay for SportsCenter that was basically entitled Everything You Missed, with the concept that people have not been paying attention to the NBA, you know, and here in, you know, 90 seconds is everything that you missed. So that's definitely true. And, you know, one of the things that's happening, you know, NBA ratings early this season have been down a little bit.
Yep.
And there's a lot of people trying to figure out why, because last year the NBA had great year ratings-wise, one of their best years ever. And the ratings were a little bit down, and people were like, wow, what happened? What's going on? Is the NBA less popular? And the answer is that this has been a great NFL season.
Yeah.
So especially the Thursday night game, obviously TNT has a game on Thursday night. Well, it's been going up against these really much better NFL games on Thursdays. So the TNT Thursday game is way down. So even at ESPN, we recognize that even more than normal, we have more fans that have been watching football who are just remembering that there's basketball season going on.
Well, it's probably a good place to start. I mean, you know, Nick and I will spend a lot of time talking about some of the problems that the NFL is facing. And we've been somewhat critical of Major League Baseball for some of the changes they feel like they're just trying to ram in, you know, with Rob Manfred wanting to, you know, tinker with things. How do you feel like the NBA is overall right now in terms of just the overall health of the league? Because, you know, from our perspective, it seems to be as healthy maybe as what it's ever been.
Yeah, there's a lot of excitement about these Duke players, especially Zion Williamson. You know, LeBron's turning 34 in a week and a half. I mean, he's not going to be around forever. And there is a desire to, you know, we have guys like Steph Curry in their prime, you know, Anthony Davis in their prime. But, you know, Zion Williamson is the type of guy who can potentially generate eyeballs, the idea that you want to watch him play. So the NBA has quite a few of those type of players now. Also, there's new rules this year where they're really, really trying to cut down on any grabbing and holding on defense.
Yep.
So that there's big-time freedom of movement. So you're seeing – there's been more 140-point NBA games just in the first 2.5 months of the season as there were the last 3 years combined. So scoring is way, way up. Sometimes you might catch a game where you're seeing the officials calling, holding, and grabbing a little bit to try to reinforce the rules, and you see a lot of free throw games. And so, you know, granted, while they're going through that transition, there's been some rough moments. But, and, you know, you have all the coaches complaining about it. But in general, scoring is way, way up, which is what the league wants. The league wants games to be 125 to 120, lots of three-pointers. And so the league's going great in that direction. Overall, though, I'd say that, you know, the New York Knicks are not good and haven't been good for a while. The Lakers have not made the playoffs for a couple of, I think, for 4 years. And when New York and L.A. are not good, it drags the league down. And I say this as a proud Omaha resident, but that's just a reality. Big markets drive the league. Chicago has been down. The Lakers now are coming back a little bit. Their ratings are coming back, but they are not where they were when they were, like, winning championships. So the league, to a certain extent, is always going to be somewhat weighed down when the biggest markets teams aren't doing great. So obviously the Warriors in San Francisco, that's a great market, does really well. But, you know, LeBron left the East this year, and the team that's kind of replaced them is the Toronto Raptors, which is a non-U.S. market.
Mm-hmm.
So overall, I think the league still has room to grow. There's still a higher ceiling for it because of those big markets.
Yeah, you know, I feel like I read a Bleacher Report magazine article about the Lakers and LeBron and playing with him and the kind of guys that want to play with him, the kind of guys that don't want to play with him. Would you say generally that you would regard him as a difficult guy to play with just because of the style in which he plays and what he demands out of his teammates?
Yeah, Joe, it's not for everybody.
Right.
You know, I think the thing about LeBron, here's what I would say if any of LeBron's teammates ever, you know, called me and said, what is it like to play with him? I would say, well, look, he's going to get you a chance at a ring. He may not win it, but you'll be playing in relevant games. You'll be on national television a couple times a week, you know, for 5 months out of the year. If you play well with him, you're going to get paid. There's a trail of guys who have gotten really well paid. But if he doesn't feel like he needs you, he will cut you loose. He doesn't have, like, I mean, the loyalty is the wrong word. He has loyalty to some people. But if you're his teammate, you're either helping him or you're out of the way. There's a trail of people who've been paid and gotten rings, and there's a trail of people who he has thrown off the boat overboard. So it's challenging. And your game, what I would say about LeBron is that he's circumstantially unselfish, which means that if you stand in the corner, LeBron will deliver the ball to you in the perfect shooting pocket, you know, how you want it, right where you want it, and it'll be there, and you will get a wide open shot. That ball may come at 50 miles an hour with 3 seconds on the shot clock, and if you miss two or three in a row, you may not see the ball for a week, but he will get you that open shot. So if you know that's basically the eye of the needle that you can thread. If you can thread that eye of the needle, you playing alongside LeBron can be wonderful.
You know, people always want to compare LeBron James to Michael Jordan or to whoever else. I mean, whoever you perceive to be the greatest basketball talent of all time. But is he the most unique player of his kind ever to play the game in your estimation?
Well, there's never been anybody of his size. Sorry. There's never been anybody of his size who has the skill set he does. The closest would be Magic Johnson, because Magic was a 6'9" point guard. But Magic didn't score like this guy. I mean, this is a guy who doesn't pride himself on being a scorer. And later this year, I think probably in the next 6 weeks or so, he's going to pass Michael Jordan in points. He's already the highest scoring player in history in the playoffs. So we're talking about a guy who is an elite level passer, an elite level playmaker, and also an elite level scorer. I don't think he'll catch Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, but he's going to finish in the top three or two in scoring. So you look at that kind of package. We've just never seen anybody like that. Not only that, but a guy who is very charismatic within within fan bases.
Talking to Brian Windhorst, he's joining us in studio here, ESPN NBA Insider. Now, you know, when you look at this particular Lakers team, this is obviously, you know, year number one for them, and you know, in playoff position at least at the moment. Who's, you know, knows if it'll end up that way, but you mentioned you got to have the right guys. For some guys, it's great to play with LeBron. For some guys, it's not. Who do you feel like on this team kind of fits the long-term vision and who maybe is not destined? Maybe he's going to be more in that thrown overboard category at some
point. Well, Brandon Ingram was a guy who, you know, number two pick out of Duke. A lot of excitement about him. He also had a really good second half of last season. And
a little lean coming out of college, if I remember correct.
Well,
right?
There were people who called him a poor man's Kevin Durant, really poor. But I mean, he had a really good second half of the season last year, and I felt like you know, had a chance. The problem is he's played very poorly next to LeBron, because he needs the ball in his hands and everything. And there's two layers to it. You know, one, you know, this was the best player they had left on their roster, so you figure, oh, him and LeBron together, or like him and Dwayne Wade, or him and Kyrie Irving, put them together and they compete for championships. Or he has a great year in this season playing with LeBron, and you could trade him for
somebody.
I don't know, Anthony Davis?
Sure.
What has in fact happened is the exact opposite. He has played poorly with LeBron to the point where when they do play together, Luke Walton looks for opportunities to not play him together. Like, they stretch out Ingram's minutes away from LeBron, and his stats have all gone down, and his value is less. Because, I mean, we'll never know for sure, because we were not standing inside the San Antonio Spurs front office. But the San Antonio Spurs might have been willing to trade Kawhi Leonard to the Lakers last summer if they were willing to include Lonzo Ball and
Brandon Ingram.
They passed on that offer so that they could hold on to the players. Could they trade him for Kawhi Leonard today? No, they could not. So that's the thing. Like, the Lakers have rolled the dice now, not trading for Paul George, not trading for Kawhi Leonard. I don't know if that's going to work out long term or not, because I don't know if they're going to get any of these guys in free agency.
Well, yeah, who do they want? I mean, ideally, like at the end of the day, if, you know, Mitch Kupchak and Jeannie Buss and everybody else had their way, or Jeannie Buss, I should say, who do they want? I mean, who do they want to bring in to play alongside LeBron?
Well, Paul George would have been great.
Mm-hmm.
They couldn't even get a meeting with him, and Paul George grew up a Lakers fan. sorry. Kawhi Leonard would be tremendous with any, just about any player in the league. But the thing about it is, also Kevin Durant, who's a free agent this summer, if you got Durant, it would be like a double score, because not only would you get, in my mind, a top three player in the league, but you take him away from your primary competition. The problem is Durant has two championships, may have three by the spring. Kawhi has a championship. You look at Klay Thompson, another guy who would be tremendous alongside LeBron. They don't have to come play for the Lakers to play for titles. That's one of the big drawing cards, to come play with LeBron. All the ancillary things that come with it, the extra criticism, the extra pressure, and everything like that, comes along with the possibility of you getting a chance to play for a title. Well, these guys already have titles. They don't need the extra weight and expectations and everything that comes along with it. So I don't think the Lakers are actually in prime position, even though they have cap space.
Talking to Brian Windhorst, ESPN NBA insider here on AM 590 ESPN Omaha. Last question about the Lakers. And, you know, I will admit I have not heard a lot about Lonzo Ball's father as of recent. Has that one sort of been shoved to the background? I mean, was that a team decision just to say, hey, we've had enough of this? Or what's the story with Mr. Ball at this point?
There's got to be a story there. I don't know what it is. There's some people who have said they're paying him or something not to show up. It has been amazing how distant he has been. Now, part of it, I think, is he physically hasn't been there because he was running a junior league in Europe.
Lithuania, I want to say, or Latvia or someplace. Lithuania.
Now his son is back playing high school basketball in Ohio.
Right.
And he's been there. So I think part of it is physically he has not been in L.A. I would like to think that Lonzo went and said, hey, Dad, you're not doing me any favors. I'm kind of an adult now. Will you let me alone? But that has never stopped him before. Mm-hmm. So I also think something else. I think if LeVar went head-to-head with LeBron, we know who would win, both within like the narrative game in the media and with the Lakers. And so what I think probably happened, although I don't know, is that LeVar made a business decision not to butt heads with LeBron. The other thing is, if you're Lonzo Ball, you want to stay with the Lakers.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to be traded to the New Orleans Pelicans for Anthony Davis. You don't want to be traded to some other known team. You want to stay with the Lakers and be alongside LeBron. And for that to happen, your family cannot be a drag. You cannot be, it's already hard enough to mesh with LeBron. And I actually think that Lonzo's done a good job of that. So I think it's a business decision being made. I kind of want to stay here with LeBron for this run. And maybe Dad needs to, hang out and worry about the younger sons than get in my way.
You ever actually met him? Met LeVar?
Oh, yeah.
What kind of a dude is he? I mean, is it played up a little bit just for the PR, nature of it? Or is he really as kind of boisterous as what he seems?
You know, I met LeVar the day he was on First Take, and it's actually become sort of like a meme on Twitter, the day he walked out with sort of that strut.
Yeah, kind of the WWE thing.
Yeah, that was actually in L.A. Normally, First Take is shot, now it's in New York, but back then it was shot in Connecticut. That day it happened to be shooting in L.A., and I was there. And I was there when he actually came out. I was on the set. And it was early in the morning, so, First Take goes between 10 a.m. and noon Eastern, so that means 7 a.m. To 9 a.m. West Coast time, and they lived way the heck out in Chino, which is a good hour and 20 minutes from L.A. So I was there at 6:30 in the morning, L.A. time. LeVar and those kids had to be up probably at 5 a.m. to get there. Lonzo had his hood pulled up and the string tightened. He was barely seeing. He wasn't interested in being awake. LaMelo or LiAngelo, the guy who played at UCLA for 15 minutes last year, he was literally sleeping on a couch in the green room.
Oh,
and LaMelo was up and bouncing around. But I remember LeVar, I met him before the show. he was getting ready to go on the show. Like, he was basically like, and he wasn't doing jump rope, but he was getting ready to do the show. And what I thought about him is I actually thought he was really, really smart. I thought everything he did, I think, did a good job of promoting his kids. I don't think creating his own brand was such a good business decision, but I understand why he did it. Mm-hmm. I actually think a lot of things that he did were smart. And I actually feel like he, for the most part, he took care of his kids. I think he went off the reservation when he took them to Lithuania. I think that was a mistake. He ruined his kids' high school career. He attracted a lot of negative attention for himself. Had he just sort of stopped as, mm-hmm. you know, basically WWE fight promoter and just promoted his kids, it was when he tried to, like, take over. Like, I think it's hilarious that he would say, I would beat Michael Jordan. I think it's hilarious he would say, I never lost. Like, I think that's just good for the game. When it actually comes to hurting people's careers, that's when I think he crossed the line.
I agree. Brian Windhorst joining us in studio. More with him coming up next on AM 590 ESPN Omaha.
This is Omaha Sports Insider, online and on air. On air. OSI, your sports source, powered by KMTV and AM 590 ESPN Omaha.
Well, Brian Windhorst, ESPN NBA Insider, joining us in studio once again. Throughout the remainder of the week, we're going to have some special guests in studio. Tomorrow, Mitch Sherman, college football reporter for ESPN.com, going to stop in. Also, Michael Sevier, co-host of The Bottom Line, will be in with us. A little bit later on in the week, we will let you know who is going to stop by. But every day this week, kind of doing something a little different as we kind of count down towards the holiday season. Brian, we spent some time talking about the Lakers before the break. Let's talk about a team here in the Midwest that, you know, a lot of people are fans of, that has had a real rough go of it recently, and that is the Chicago Bulls. first question for you, because, look, I'm an Iowa guy. I grew up in Des Moines. A lot of respect and a lot of love for Fred Hoiberg. Was what happened with him more of a Hoiberg issue, or was it more of a Chicago Bulls front office, the way the team is built issue that led to him getting fired earlier this year?
Well, one of the things you see in the NBA is you see the same mistakes get repeated all the time, unfortunately. Yep. And you see teams, they hire a coach, and then when it doesn't work out, whether it doesn't work out in 1 year or it doesn't work out in 10 years, they tend to swing completely back to the other direction.
Right.
So Tom Thibodeau, he was very successful, but, you know,
all defense, drill sergeant.
Yeah, exactly. Not a former player.
Mm-hmm.
So they switch over to a guy who's offensively minded, former player. They really were looking for the next Steve Kerr, quite frankly. They were like, Steve Kerr was so good with Golden State, they were basically like, find us another Steve Kerr. Of course, it helps to have Steph Curry and Klay Thompson. They should start with that. but, you know, I think one of the things about Fred was, you know, there was this perception, or maybe it was the reality, that he maybe wasn't holding the players, you know, to the letter of the law as much. So, I think Fred was going to get fired at the end of this year no matter what.
Yeah.
Short of him winning 50 games, which there was no way they were going to do that with that roster. But short of an incredible season, I think he was going to get fired. And since things weren't going well, they swung to the other direction. They go get a guy who is not a former player, who is on the staff, who is kind of like that drill sergeant mentality in Jim Boylan, who, you know, if you knew anything about him when he was the head coach at the University of Utah, this is exactly what he was, you know. But what he's kind of doing doesn't necessarily fly in the NBA. So one of the things, you know, the first week on the job, he had a couple of 2.5-hour long practices. And I know that doesn't sound that long, but in the NBA, because of the number of games, and you got to just keep in mind that the teams typically average about 4 games a week from mid-October through mid-April. And they've got to play in different cities, thousands of miles.
Yep.
And they also have practices on game days. They have a morning workout on game day. So over the course of an NBA season, you may only have, 8 to 10 legitimate tape-up-your-ankles, go-hard practices during the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
The rest of it is going through strategies, you know, drilling, stuff like that, but... And so Jim Boylan came in and in the middle of a season said, we're going to start having like these training camp practices again in between games. And, you know, you can understand the players. I mean, if you were in the players' shoes, you could see why this would be a surprise, because this is not the way you've prepared your body, not the way you've gone through your career. So the other thing that happens in the NBA when the teams play games on back-to-back days, the third day is always an off day, and especially if there's travel on the back-to-back days. And typically in the NBA, if there's an opportunity to give guys Sunday off, especially if you're at home, they do. So mm-hmm. the Bulls had a game on Friday. The Bulls had a game on Saturday, and then they had Sunday. So Boylan puts them through a two-hour practice, a pretty rigorous full practice on Thursday. They play on Friday, and they win. They get a really nice win on that Friday. Then they play on Saturday, and they get blown out by 56 points. Now, granted,
yeah.
that's bad. And I don't want to make it sound like I got their back at all, right?
But
and so he pulls his starters 3 minutes into the second half, and after the game says, I wanted to save their energy for practice tomorrow. Now, Grant, I'm going to go again. Practice Thursday, game Friday, game Saturday, and he's calling a practice on Sunday, which he said was going to be so hard that he was holding them out of a game. This is just not done in the NBA.
Yeah.
And, I mean, if you want to say, well, these guys, you know, toughen up, guys, you're millionaires. I mean, that's fine. You can say that, but I'm just going to say that, in general, NBA athletes are in excellent condition. You know, you don't watch an NBA game typically and say, boy, those guys are out of shape.
Not normally.
You may see some teams that operate at a little bit faster pace than other pace. And, you know, a casualty of 82 games is some nights guys aren't going to have the same energy level. That's the nature of the league. But you don't look at an NBA player. And the general manager of the Bulls, John Paxson, said, well, you know, these guys brag about doing 2 and 3 workouts a day in the offseason. They put it on Instagram, so why should they get upset about a 2.5 hour practice? And I mean, I know that there are people out there saying, that's how I would run the team, you know?
That's why you're not an NBA coach.
But in the NBA, players have more power over the players have more power than the coach. And so that was pretty much a disaster. Players thought about boycotting that Sunday practice. They ended up having meetings and no practice. But typically, again, on that day, you'd have the full day off. And then, by the way, a day off for an NBA player a lot of times still means coming into the facility and getting treatment. So it hasn't been going that well for the Bulls. And then right after that, Jabari Parker, who inexplicably to me, I thought, I mean, I'm a believer in, you know, making an opinion when the team does a move, then sticking to that opinion. I don't believe in going back on it because you can only make a decision of where you are at the moment. But Jabari Parker on a 2-year, $40 million contract, even though the second year was non-guaranteed. See, to me, that's even crazier because if you believe in this guy enough to give him $20 million, you give him an opportunity to get out of the contract after 1 year. What happens if he is a star? What happens if he averages 30 a game? Now you don't have him. Like, the whole concept of a big 1-year contract for a team like the Bulls was insane to me. And so Jabari Parker got yanked out of the starting lineup, like, practically in training camp. That was by Fred Hoiberg, so the guy who's supposedly the softy. They bring in Jim Boylan, and he yanks him out of the rotation altogether. And now they're trying to trade him, which they will not get a return for very much. So that's been a disaster. So it's not been a good time for the Bulls. The only thing I can say is they in the last two drafts, they have drafted Lauri Markkanen out of Arizona, who looks like he's going to be a good player. But in all honesty, if you're going to go anywhere in the NBA, he's not going to be your best player.
No.
He's going to be maybe your 2 or 3. And Wendell Carter from Duke, who looks like he might be the best guy from Duke out of this draft. You know, there were some stars came out of Duke. Obviously, Marvin Bagley went higher. But again, best case scenario, he's your third best player. So they've done a good job on the draft last couple of years, but they don't have that signature star. And so, to me, if I were them, I'd be trying to lose every game the rest of the season to try to get into this draft to get that signature star.
Well, and who are the stars in this signature draft? I mean, I know a lot of college hoops fans are very familiar with Zion Williamson from Duke. I mean, he looks the part of an NBA player already. I mean, probably looked the part of an NBA player about 2 years ago, just judging by how big he is. But is he regarded in NBA circles as kind of the prize of this draft, or is it somebody else?
Yeah. Although I'm always a little bit nervous when everybody says a player.
This is the guy.
You know.
Yeah.
There's a lot of excitement about RJ Barrett from Duke as well. People think he can be a kind of difference-making player. He as far as his actual polish on his game, some people think he's better than Zion. And then Cameron Reddish. A lot of people think that Cam Reddish could be a top 4 pick too. So there's a lot of excitement about the top end of this draft. And this year, the NBA's lottery rules changed. Typically the team that had the worst record had a 25% chance of getting the best pick, and they felt like too many teams were in a race to the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
So they evened out the lottery odds. So it's not as weighted towards the worst couple of teams. It's more, you have just as much of a chance to get the top pick if you're the third worst team as you are the worst. So even, you know, quote unquote, doing the Philadelphia tanking thing won't necessarily help you. You're really going to need more luck in the lottery than in years past.
Talking to Brian Windhorst, ESPN NBA insider here, joining us in studio on AM 590 ESPN Omaha. One more on the Bulls. Man, it felt like they were so close the one year with Derrick Rose, and I think maybe Jimmy Butler was a young guy on that team. They had, you know, Noah was there and a couple other guys. It felt like they were right on the cusp of breaking through and winning a title. And ever since then, Derrick Rose got hurt, slew of other issues with his team. How close, I mean, how do you feel like there are pieces there that they can build around, or are they really in going to have to blow the whole thing up from the front office all the way down mode?
Well, you know, when you have a catastrophe, which is what happened with the Bulls, it's never just one thing. So obviously the big moment was in the playoff game where Derrick Rose blew out his knee.
Yes.
He's never been the same player.
Mm-mm.
And he was a MVP, I think, in his third season, which is just like, you're talking about all-time Hall of Fame type guys who are able to reach MVP in their third year. I mean, you looked at him and said, oh my God, this guy could be one of the five best players in the league for the next decade. So obviously that was the big moment. But the game moved away from them. You know, the way that they wanted to play and they were built, they were not built to shoot three-pointers.
Mm-hmm.
They were not built for the revolutionary offense in the NBA. I think even if you look at Tom Thibodeau, who's gone to Minnesota, where he had a great team, they haven't been able to be successful there because the way Tibbs coached wasn't the way the league was going, and they weren't positioned. Their good players were like Taj Gibson and Joakim Noah,
mm-hmm.
Guys who didn't spread the court. You know, they were not modern-day bigs. And that season, 2010-11, when they won 60 games, they were undefeated against the Heat in the regular season that year. And the team that ended up winning the title that year, Dallas, I mean, they were good, don't get me wrong, but they were not an all-time team.
Mm-hmm.
Dirk was great in the postseason, and maybe if the Bulls had won the Eastern Conference Finals and gotten to play Dallas, maybe they would have lost Dallas too. But that year, before the Heat really had it together, they had not gone out and added Shane Battier. They had not gone out and added Ray Allen. The Warriors, you know, there hadn't been that assembly of that great team. The Spurs were a little bit down at the time. The Spurs didn't have Kawhi Leonard on their roster. That was their moment. The Bulls could have won the championship like in 2011 or 2012. And the injuries and just they couldn't get past the Heat, that was their window. And, you know, you never know how close you are when you're in it. But that has ended up what happened, and they just haven't recovered. I will say this about the Bulls. They have known when to give up on a player. They got out of Noah before it was too late. They
yep.
got out of Luol Deng before it was too late. They traded Derrick Rose. I mean, Derrick's having a good year now, but he's a role player. He wasn't the max player that they had him on. They've done a good job of getting into punt formation, basically. But they haven't done a good job of maximizing their assets, which is, again, it was a near miss. To win a championship, you got to have a lot of things go right. I'm not saying like I could have done a better job, but they were right there, and they missed it.
Okay, last question before we take a quick time out here. Something that you referenced, you know, the Bulls not being built for kind of the revolutionary offense that we see all over the NBA now. I'm always, you know, when we're sitting here 30 years from now, say we're sitting here having coffee or whatever, we're talking about, you know, how much the game has changed. It always, to me, starts at the bottom or somewhere in the middle, and then all of a sudden, you know, the big changes in the game reach the top, and then you see this massive trickle down. And you look at, like, the way college basketball is played now, high school basketball is played now. I mean, it's all pace and space. It's all predicated on three-point shooting. I mean, I can't remember the last time I watched any basketball game at any level, and you had a big playing with his back to the basket, and that was your primary source of offense. So what was the seminal moment? Was it Steve Kerr getting hired by the Golden State Warriors and taking that team? Was it a guy like Steph Curry coming into the league and succeeding at the level and kind of changing the expectations? I mean, what was it in your opinion?
You know, I started covering basketball when I got out of college, and I remember it was in the year 2001, and I was covering this college team, and they went in and they played this road game against Ohio University. And Ohio University took like 35 threes in that game, which I'd never seen a team take 35 mm-hmm. threes. Now it's normal, but back then it was like really crazy. And they made like 8 of them. And I remember I asked the Ohio University coach, how can you take so many threes? And he goes, well, it's simple math. You shoot 1 out of 3 on every 3. It's the same as 2 out of 4 on 2s. And I started thinking about that. And it's now very, very simple. I mean, now we think of that as second nature. But when I heard that, I had never heard that math before. You shoot 33% on 2s, it's like shooting 50% on 3s. And my answer to him was, well, you didn't shoot anywhere near 1 out of 3 on 3s tonight, buddy, and you got beat. So what's your point? So that concept has been around for a while. The idea of efficient offense, getting more points per possession out of each shot, which we could go into the math here, has been around for a while. And we've seen teams attempt to do some things by getting possessions up. But it was really Steph Curry. I think Steve Nash changed the game a little bit in how they would play very up-tempo. But even now, like if you put those Steve Nash teams from the mid-2000s into the NBA, they would be like in the middle of the pack. Like now they all race. I mean, if you ever go past ESPN Classic or NBA TV and watch a game from 2004, you will not recognize the game.
Yeah.
And so Steph Curry really changed a lot of it. I say that, you know, Steph Curry changed the shape of the court in a weird way. He made the basketball game be played in different areas on the court. And people like it. People like watching three-pointers. Now, I will tell you that if you really look at the numbers, there are some teams that are creeping back towards shooting mid-range shots because all these defenses are aligned to protect the three-pointer. Actually, the Golden State Warriors take the second most mid-range shots of any team in the league. They're already sort of creeping back into shots that, by the way, just because you take it from two-point range, if it's a smart two-point shot, it can be a good two-point shot. So the game is already starting to bend back a little bit if you really know where to watch. And, Joe, I really also do think we are just one great dominating big player away. Like, if a Shaquille O'Neal were to come back and dominate the game, which Shaq would dominate the game now, there would be problems at the defensive end, but he would destroy all these centers who are meant to shoot threes. He might average – in today's NBA, Shaq might average like 38 and 18. If we see another player like that, we could swing it back. But I do think – and I do think it will happen – but right now, we're in the glory area of the three-pointer.
Brian Windhorst joining in studio. A little bit more with him coming up next on AM 590, ESPN Omaha.
The AM 590 inbox is open 24/7 on Twitter at AM 590 ESPN Radio or send an email to OSI at AM590ESPNRadio.com. You're listening to Omaha Sports Insider on AM 590 ESPN Omaha.
All right, one more segment with Brian Windhorst before we tell you what's on tap and end things up today. Brian, before we... TJ has a couple questions for you. He's a big NBA fan, so we'll let him have a moment. Before we do that, I promised him when you came in, you would tell the LeBron James train wreck movie story from when you went to see it here. And now LeBron apparently has a Space Jam movie coming out at some point.
Right,
and
yeah.
I mean, Mr. Hollywood now, big time.
Yeah, he's filming it this summer. It was when he signed with the Lakers, he goes, well, I might have some free time in the summer for a change, so I'll make a movie, because he didn't think he was going to make the finals. Maybe, I don't know. You never know what happens in the NBA. Yeah, TJ, so it was. I don't care. I'll say now. It was a Village Point. And it's one of the reasons why I'll never go on a Tuesday, because, you know, $5 night.
Oh, yeah.
You get some crazy stuff. And
that's when I go often, actually.
Well, there you go. We're going to see Trainwreck, and it was before the show, and it was packed because it was a Tuesday night in the summer, you know, totally packed. And we're getting ready. I don't even think the previews weren't on yet. And this this woman, I want to say she, you know, she was a younger looking woman, but she had about an 18-year-old daughter. So do the math. And she goes, I want everyone's attention. And she's standing up. She's standing in the middle of the theater. You know, it was one of those stadium seating.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody looks at her, you know, and she goes, she points down, like, below her. I couldn't tell exactly where she was, who she was pointing at. She goes, my ex-husband is here, and he's with the woman that he left me for, and I think he should leave. I don't think I should have to sit here and watch this movie with him. And like, you know, there's these gasps. Oh, my God. And there's this, her daughter is, like, grabbing her. Mom, no, Mom, don't. And your daughter's, I don't know, late teens, enough to be petrified, embarrassed.
Oh, okay? My gosh. I can only imagine.
So my wife is actually at the bathroom, and she's with her friend, and I'm texting her, you got to get in here. You're about to miss the show. You're going to miss the best part of the night. And so somebody from the theater, and I mean, I don't know, it was a Tuesday night. Maybe the woman had had a drink or two. I don't know. But the woman from the theater comes up and says, you know, tries to calm her down. She's like, no, I will not be calmed down. You calm him down. And so they ask her to leave, and they are escorting her out. And she's got this enormous, the biggest tub of popcorn that you could possibly have, she's got with her. And, you know, there's people like yapping at her as she's leaving. And she walks across, and apparently her ex-husband was sitting in the front row, and she gets to him, and she dumps the entire thing of popcorn on top of his head.
Man.
And there's like this other gasp, and I remember this guy behind me goes, Jerry, Jerry, Jerry. And what I take away from it is that that guy, just popcorn all over him, just sat there and watched the movie. He did not care. He was just like, I don't care. And I was like, you know, I'm kind of coming around to this guy's side. You know, maybe he had a point in this whole thing. Huh. I felt bad for the 18-year-old daughter amongst all of it. She had to leave. She couldn't stay with her dad. He just sat there, enjoyed the show, stayed throughout the credits, you know. How's it going, everybody?
It was a good movie. It was funny. I did enjoy it. I wouldn't say LeBron. I mean, he played LeBron in the movie, basically. But
I know,
still, it was worth it.
You know, you can't... Like, I give him credit because I'm not saying I could do any better. But when you play yourself, you know... Do you know originally in that movie, I don't know if anybody knows about the movie, he plays kind of like the best friend character. It's kind of a stretch that he would be hanging with like a...
Bill Hader.
With like an orthopedic surgeon.
Yeah.
But whatever.
I'd agree.
Originally in the script, they wrote him to be... like need knee surgery and that he would come and like, you know, do his knee surgery and, you know, help him back to health. And like LeBron's agent was like, no, Mr. James has never had knee surgery. He does not need knee surgery. So they got him to play the best friend character. They negotiated their way to the best friend, and they had Amari Stoudemire play the guy who needed knee surgery, which he always needs knee surgery anyway. So it was
very, very fitting.
All right, Brian, we got about 5 minutes left here. I got a couple questions for you. So this past Friday night on Twitter, NBA Twitter was a lot of fun.
It wasn't
up to DeAndre Jordan free agency night or the night that Philadelphia had all those fake Twitter accounts. And I'll probably have you set the table on this because you know the trade parameters well. But did this trade Friday night really fall apart because there was a mistaken identity of which Brooks was getting traded?
Yes. So it was a three-team trade between Washington, Phoenix, and Memphis. And to be honest with you, this trade isn't going to change the face of the NBA.
Yeah.
But Memphis has two players named Brooks. Marshawn Brooks, who's 29 years old, journeyman, was even out of the NBA a couple years ago. And Dylan Brooks, who's a second year from...
Oregon.
Yeah, second round pick. We're not talking about a guy who's going to change the course of a franchise here, but if you were going to trade for one of them, you would rather have Dylan Brooks.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the Suns thought they were trading for Dylan Brooks, and the Grizzlies thought they were trading Marshawn Brooks. And two guys named Brooks and the thing was very clear was that there were media outlets from Phoenix reporting that it was Dylan, which meant that that's what the Suns were telling them. And there were media outlets that from Memphis that were reporting Marshawn, which meant that's what the Grizzlies were telling them. And that's when I started rubbing my hands together because I go, it's clear we got a disconnect here because you know who the sources are. You know, a guy a local guy in Phoenix is not going to have the cell phone number of the general manager of the Grizzlies to get that information from. So once the national writers got in, and Adrian Wojnarowski, who's my colleague, even he was getting confused over the Brooks. And so the trade fell apart. They ended up putting together a separate trade without any Brookses involved, without the Grizzlies involved the next day. But here's what I'll say about the NBA. There are times when you would not believe the level of complexity, not believe what teams do in terms of preparing and analysis and knowing about players. And there are other times when you would be blown away at these billion-dollar businesses, at the stupid surface-level mistakes that they make. It's really at both ends. In some ways, an NBA team is advanced as a Fortune 500 company. In some ways, it's just as cheap and stupid as your local game at the Y.
Yeah, that was just a night I wanted to hit refresh on Twitter all night long, and it was great. Yeah. My other one here is Carmelo Anthony. Are we really not going to see him in the NBA again, or is he going to get one more chance, or is the next time we see him really going to be overseas?
TJ, do you believe that he is a good player still?
I think he can be in the right situation.
That's
I personally
yes.
would like to see him
yes.
in LA just for the drama. I don't think it necessarily be the best fit, but I would just like to see him paired up with his buddy LeBron.
So
but...
he's an example of a player that the game has gone away from.
Yeah.
He is not a good enough outside shooter. Like, for example, local hero Doug McDermott. Doug is such an elite level shooter that the fact that he cannot guard me at the defensive end makes up for the fact that he will be in the NBA. Will have a long career. He's actually doing really well. He had another good game last night. The Pacers are doing great. But Carmelo is not good enough to survive being one of the five or six worst defenders in the league. So if you watched in the playoffs last year, Utah played Oklahoma City in the first round, and like every single possession, they set up a switch so that Carmelo's man had the ball, and they just attacked him relentlessly, and they had to pull him off the floor because he couldn't keep up, because he was shooting 36% at the other end from three-point range. Now, if he's shooting 48%, then you can survive that. So a team that would, you know, be in a playoff situation would, you know, that would be a team that probably couldn't afford to have him. But then if you're a team that, you know, is, you know, stinks, why do you want a guy who's at the end of his career taking up minutes? What he would be ideal to do would be to take a role like Vince Carter has with the Hawks, where he's sort of teaching those young kids, and those young kids 10 years from now will be like, well, when I was early in the league, I had Vince Carter showing me the ropes, because Vince Carter has changed his game. Carmelo hasn't been able to do that. So it's a long way of me saying there's a decent chance he's played his last NBA game, but even if he does come back, it'll be for short, and I don't think it'll be with a real contender.
Last question, Brian. We got about 30 seconds is all. Denver Nuggets, near the top of the Western Conference right now. It's a team that's kind of new to being in that spot. Yeah. You a believer in him this year?
I'm a believer that I can't watch my league pass because for some reason the Omaha mark is black mark, and I've brought this up with the league directly. They're missing three starters right now to injury. They had a big win last night over Toronto. I think they have a good future. I don't think this is going to be their year. I think they're going to be better in years two and three, but this is a team that hasn't made the playoffs in 5 years, and if you're looking for a team to get behind, they have some really exciting young players, Jamal Murray, Nikola Jokic. Unfortunately, you can't watch them on TV here, but you know, they're on ESPN every now and then.
There you go. Brian, thanks for coming in, man. Really appreciate it.
Have a good holidays.
You too. We'll tell you what's on tap for the rest of the night next here on AM 590, ESPN Omaha.
This is Omaha Sports Insider, online and on air. On air. OSI, your sports source, powered by KMTV and AM 590 ESPN Omaha.
As promised, prior to the break, final segment of the day means it's time for What's on Tap, brought to you by Cunningham's Pub and Grill. You can find them 108th and Dodge in the Old Mill area. Great place to watch all the action on their great TV set up there. Excellent smoked wings, great craft beer, and perhaps a sneaky good game in the NFL tonight for Monday Night Football. The New Orleans Saints the New Orleans Saints on the road at the Carolina Panthers tonight. This is a 7:15 kickoff on ESPN with the TV coverage. Saints win. We go a long, long way towards securing home field advantage throughout the playoffs. Panthers looking to keep their playoff hopes alive. Again, Monday Night Football taking prime time tonight on ESPN. That will do it for us for the day. Back tomorrow at 2. Mitch Sherman going to join us on the program tomorrow. Michael Severe of The Bottom Line going to join us on the program tomorrow. That and plenty more. Sports Nightly next on AM 590 ESPN Omaha.